Unit 3. Part 1. Language Skills Development. 1. Starter. A. Read the lyrics of a song. Listen to the tape or CD and sing in chorus.
Oceans apart, day after day, and I slowly go insane. I hear your voice on the line, but it doesn't stop the pain. If I see you next to never, how can we sleep forever? Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you. I took for granted all the times that I thought would last somehow. I hear the laughter, I taste the tears, but I can't get near you now. Oh, can't you see, baby? You've got me going crazy. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you. I wonder how it can
B. Listen to a passage and answer the following questions. True love. Many lovers promise to be together forever, in life and in death, but I don't believe I've heard of anyone whose loyalty and devotion matched that of Mrs. Strauss. The year was 1912. Mrs. Strauss and her husband were passengers on the Titanic during its fateful voyage. Not many women went down with the ship, but Mrs. Strauss was one of the few women who did not survive for one simple reason. She could not bear to leave her husband. This is how Mabel Bird, Mrs. Strauss's servant, who survived the disaster, told the story after she was rescued. When the Titanic began to sink, panicked women and children were the first ones loaded into lifeboats. Mr. and Mrs. Strauss were calm and comforting to the passengers and helped many of them into the boats. If it had not been for them, Marble stated, I would have drowned. I was in the fourth or fifth lifeboat. Mrs. Strauss made me get into the boat. Then Mr. Strauss begged his wife to get into the lifeboat with her servant and the others. Mrs. Strauss started to get in. She had one foot on the gunwale, but then suddenly she changed her mind, turned away, and stepped back onto the sinking ship. Please, dear, get into the boat, her husband urged. Mrs. Strauss looked deep into the eyes of the man with whom she'd spent most of her life, the man who had been her best friend, her heart's true companion, and always a comfort to her soul. She grabbed his arm and drew his trembling body close to hers. No, Mrs. Strauss is said to have replied, I will not get into the boat. We have been together through a great many years. We are old now. I will not leave you. Where you go, I will go. And that is where they were last seen, standing arm in arm on the deck, this devoted wife clinging courageously to her husband, this loving husband clinging protectively to his wife, as the ship sank, together forever.
2. Text. The Love Letter. I was always a little in awe of great-aunt Stephina Rose. Indeed, as children, we were all frankly terrified of her. The fact that she did not live with the family, preferring her tiny cottage and solitude to the comfortable but rather noisy household where we were brought up, added to the respectful fear in which she was held. She was a tiny little woman to inspire so much veneration. She was always dressed in black, and her dark clothes melted into the shadows of the living room and made her look smaller than ever. But you felt, the moment she entered, that something vital and strong and somehow indestructible had come in with her, although she moved slowly, and her voice was sweet and soft. As I grew older, I found, rather to my surprise, that I had become genuinely fond of my aloof old great-aunt. But to this day I do not know what strange impulse made me take George to see her and to tell her, before I had confided in another living soul of our engagement. To my astonishment, she was delighted. "An Englishman," she exclaimed, "but that is splendid. And you," she turned to George, "you are making your home in this country. You do not intend to return to England just yet?" She seemed relieved when she heard that George had bought a farm near our own farm and intended to settle in South Africa. She became quite animated and chatted away to him. After that, I would often slip away to the little cottage by the Mealy Lands. Once she was somewhat disappointed on hearing that we had decided to wait for 2 years before getting married. But when she learned that my father and mother were both pleased with the match, she seemed reassured. Still, she often appeared anxious about my love affair and would ask questions that seemed to me strange, almost as though she feared that something would happen to destroy my romance. But I was quite unprepared for her outburst when I mentioned that George thought of paying a lightning visit to England before we were married. "He must not do it," she cried. "Ina, you must not let him go. Promise me you will prevent him." She was trembling all over. I did what I could to console her, but she looked so tired and pale that I persuaded her to go to her room and rest, promising to return the next day. When I arrived, I found her sitting on the stoop. She looked lonely and pathetic, and for the first time I wondered why no man had ever taken her and looked after her and loved her. She paused, as though she did not quite know how to begin. Then she seemed to give herself, mentally, a little shake. You must have wondered, she said, why I was so upset at the thought of young George's going to England without you. I'm an old woman, and perhaps I have the silly fancies of the old, but I should like to tell you my own love story, and then you can decide whether it is wise for your man to leave you before you are married. I was quite a young girl when I first met Richard Weston. He was an Englishman who boarded with the von Rensburg on the next farm, 4 or 5 miles from us. We loved one another from the first moment we met, though we did not speak of our love until the evening of my 18th birthday. All our friends and relatives had come to my party, and in the evening we danced on the big old carpet which we had laid down in the barn. Richard had come with the von Rensburg, and we danced together as often as we dared, which was not very often, for my father hated the Eidlanders. That was the happiest birthday of my life, for while we were resting between dances, Richard took me outside into the cool, moonlit night, and there, under the stars, he told me he loved me and asked me to marry him. Of course, I promised I would, for I was too happy to think of what my parents would say, or indeed of anything except Richard was not at our meeting place as he had arranged. So when my father asked if I would drive with him to Dreventine, I was delighted. But when we reached the homestead and were sitting on the stoop drinking our coffee, we heard that Richard had left quite suddenly and had gone back to England. His father had died, and now he was the heir and must go back to look after his estates. I do not remember very much more about that day, except that the sun seemed to have stopped shining, and the country no longer looked beautiful and full of promise, but bleak and desolate as it sometimes does in winter or in times of drought. Late that afternoon, Janta, the little Hottentot herd boy, came up to me and handed me a letter, which he said the English gentleman had left for me. It was the only love letter I ever received, but it turned all my bitterness and grief into a peacefulness which was the nearest I could get, then, to happiness. I knew Richard still loved me, and somehow, as long as I had his letter, I felt that we could never be really parted, even if he were in England and I had to remain on the farm. I have it yet, and though I'm an old, tired woman, it still gives me hope and courage. It must have been a wonderful letter, Aunt Stefina, I said. The old lady came back from her dreams of that far-off romance. Perhaps, she said, hesitating a little, perhaps, my dear, you would care to read it? I should love to, Aunt Stefina, I said gently. She rose at once and tripped into the house as eagerly as a young girl. When she came back, she handed me a letter, faded and yellow with age, the edges of the envelope worn and frayed as though it had been much handled. But when I came to open it, I found that the seal was unbroken. "Open it! Open it!" said great-aunt Stefina, and her voice was shaking. I broke the seal and read. It was not a love letter in the true sense of the word, but pages of the minutest directions of how my sweetest Athena was to elude her father's vigilance, creep down to the drift at night, and there meet Janta with a horse which would take her to Smidstorp. There she was to go to my true friend Henry Wilson, who would give her money and make arrangements for her to follow her love to Cape Town, and from there to England, where, my love, we can be married at once. But if, my dearest, you are not sure that you can face life with me in a land strange to you, then do not take this important step, for I love you too much to wish you the smallest unhappiness. If you do not come, and if I do not hear from you, then I shall know that you could never be happy so far from the people and the country which you love. If, however, you feel you can keep your promise to me, but are too timid and modest to journey to England unaccompanied, then write to me, and I will, by some means, return to fetch my bride. I read no further. But, Aunt Fina, I gasped, why? Why? The old lady was watching me with trembling eagerness. Her face flushed and her eyes bright with expectation. Read it aloud, my dear, she said. I want to hear every word of it. There was never anyone I could trust. Outlanders were hated in my young days. I could not ask anyone. But, Auntie, don't you even know what he wrote? The old lady looked down, troubled and shy, like a child who had unwittingly done wrong. No, dear, she said, speaking very low. You see, I never learned to read.
New words.
Awe.
Solitude.
Respectful.
Veneration.
Indestructible.
Genuinely.
Aloof.
Confide.
Astonishment.
Splendid.
Animated.
Chatter.
Mealy.
Reassure.
Romance.
Outburst.
Lightning.
Console.
Stoop.
Pathetic.
Idlander.
Moonlit.
Homestead.
Bleak.
Desolate.
Herd.
Bitterness.
Peacefulness.
Far off.
Hesitate.
Fade.
Fray.
Minute.
Elude.
Vigilance.
Creep.
Timid.
Modest.
Unaccompanied.
Gasp.
Eagerness.
Unwittingly.
Proper nouns.
Stefina Rose.
Ina.
Richard Weston.
Von Rensburg.
Driefontein.
Yonter.
Hottentot.
Fina.
Smitsdorp.
Henry Wilson.
Cape Town.
Part 2. Language in Use. 1. Dialogue. Wedding vows. Richard Weston and Stefina Rose are holding their wedding at a Christian church in London. Listen to the wedding ceremony and fill in the blanks, then read it aloud.
Family and friends, we welcome you today to witness the marriage of Richard Weston and Stefina Rose. You have shared and contributed to their lives in the past, and by witnessing their marriage ceremony today, Richard and Stefina ask you to share in their future. Marriage is a promise, formed in the hearts of two people who love each other, which takes a lifetime to fulfill. Within the circle of its love, marriage encompasses all of life's most important relationships. A wife and a husband are each other's lover, teacher, listener, critic, and best friend. It is into this state that Richard and Stefina wish to enter. Who gives their blessing to this union?
We do.
If anyone present can show just and legal cause why they may not be joined, let them speak now, or forever hold their peace. The ring is the symbol of wedlock. The perfect circle of love, the unbroken union of this man and this woman united here today. May you both remain faithful to this symbol of true love. Please join hands and repeat after me. Man first, while placing ring on proper finger. I, Richard Weston, take Stefina Rose as my wedded wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, till death do us part.
I, Stefina Rose, take Richard Weston as my wedded husband, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, till death do us part.
New words.
Priest.
Encompass.
Union.
Wedlock.
3. Text. Cable car wedding, New Zealand's shortest ceremony.
If marriage is a journey a couple takes together, perhaps it is fitting for that journey to begin on the move, literally. You surely want your wedding ceremony to be beautiful, perfect, and most of all, memorable. After all, a wedding is a supposedly once-in-a-lifetime event, and romance is best served with wonderful and unforgettable experiences. And one way to do that is to try an unusual and moving venue. If you choose to enter the next phase in your life on a scenic cable car drive, your big day can be truly unforgettable. A British expatriate couple has made double New Zealand history by getting married on the capital city's cable car in what's thought to be the country's shortest marriage ceremony. Nicola Todd and Malcolm Stewart tied the knot in just 4.5 minutes, while the Wellington cable car completed its scheduled 6-minute journey. The cable car is one of the city's most popular tourist attractions and runs from Lambton Quay in the commercial heart of the city up to the Botanic Gardens, with panoramic views of the CBD, harbour, and surrounding districts. The expat couple also scored a third first with their marriage celebrant Katie Shannon performing her first wedding ceremony. "Everybody should get married in 4 minutes. It was such a rush, a real buzz," said Shannon. Asked why they chose to marry on the cable car, Ms. Todd, a journalism student, said she wanted something that would be a bit more fun. "I've always thought what I would like to do would be more quirky and casual and a bit more fun and different, and would involve the children." Until recently, Stewart has been working at Greymouth Hospital on the west coast of the South Island. When a friend suggested the cable car, the couple agreed and said planning the event had been remarkably stress-free. The major concern was logistics. With the cable car booked, there was no leeway for anyone to be late. Guests and the bride and groom gathered at the turnstile early in order to jump on the same car. The only cause for panic was the cancellation of the marriage celebrant's flight from Greymouth the day before. She arrived in Wellington just a few hours before the ceremony. After the brief ceremony and scenic journey, the wedding party of 17 adults and 9 children had celebratory drinks in the Cable Car Museum.
New words.
Expatriate.
Not.
Botanic.
Panoramic.
Celebrant.
Quirky.
Stress-free.
Logistics.
Leeway.
Turnstile.
Celebratory.
Proper nouns.
Nicola Todd.
Malcolm Stewart.
Lambton Quay.
CBD, Central Business District.
Katie Shannon.
Greymouth.